Welcome, one and all, to the X-Men TASS podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
Well, well, well. My name is Sonia Rappaport.
For those tuning in for the first time, or perhaps the first time in a long time, welcome and welcome back yourselves. We are back in the saddle with the X-Men animated series, or more accurately, X-Men 97.
The animated series.
Sonia, can you believe we are here?
I can't believe it. I actually can't believe it.
I believe we started this podcast way back in 2017. And if you had told us that all we had to do was review every single episode of the X-Men animated series, which we have done, every single episode of Spider-Man the animated series, which we have done, every episode of X-Men Evolution, which we have done, every episode of Wolverine the X-Men, which we have done, and every episode of Batman the animated series, which we have done, that literally the week we were concluding Batman, in the following week, a new season of X-Men the animated series would be back? Would you have taken that deal?
Are you implying that us doing all those things made this happen?
I just can't get over the cosmic coincidence of us completing all of those series in a row. We have not taken a week off.
I mean, also, we bunched up some of the Batman the Animated Series to make it fit perfectly.
Well,
it didn't naturally fit perfectly.
Those are just details. And we also threw in many movie episodes and other random episodes, all for free, mind you, in our enormous back catalog of over 365 episodes.
Well, all for fun.
All for fun, all for free. Anyone could check out if just go scroll down that endless feed of episodes, relive the fun, go all the way back to the beginning when we sound much stupider than we do right now, which is almost impossible to believe.
They were bad. They were even worse.
Well, yeah, but they're still charming nonetheless. Don't tell people not to check them out. It is what an incredible happenstance of events. Little did we know when we started this podcast that new X-Men would... I thought, okay, one day they will do a new X-Men cartoon of some kind, but bring back the original X-Men animated series with all the surviving voice actors and in the exact writing style and picking up where season five left off 25, 30 years ago. Like, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, we dreamed, but...
It seemed... we talked about it in those ancient episodes, and we said it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always whispers of, hey, a season six... it is weird that it's called 97, even though it's the sixth season, technically. Mm-hmm. Well, really, the first season of X-Men 97. But that's, again, more details. There will be many details in this episode discussed. It's insane. I don't even know what to say, Sonia, at this point that we're here and X-Men 97 exists.
All right. You're show's all- done.
Yeah, show's over.
Show's over.
We're speechless. We have nothing to say. Will you allow me to be a little salty just for a second?
Go for it.
How are we not invited to the X-Men 97 premiere in Los Angeles, California?
Us with 500 subscribers and no social media presence, I wonder.
Well, we can't really go by subscriber count. We get thousands of downloads on certain episodes. You know, people drop in and out, which is totally fair. But still, I mean, we were talking about this show when nobody cared about it, I have to say. I remember, you know, I was really interested in doing a podcast about the X-Men because there didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a part of a community where I could talk about this, and there was just none out there. So we had to do it ourselves. And
we had to.
Yeah, we definitely had to. anyway, salt aside, that's fine. Wasn't expecting to be invited to California.
But guess what happened?
What happened?
You created a community of people who wanted to talk about the X-Men with you.
Yeah.
So you succeeded.
Yeah, mission accomplished there. And thank you to everyone listening right now. The Star Wars episode a little wackier than most, perhaps, but deservedly so, I'd say. I don't even know where to begin. First, let me dispense with the plugs, I guess. You can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Facebook and Reddit communities where you can interact with us. Search out X-Men Task Podcast. Interact with us, the rest of the community. It's great. It's a lot of fun. Rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. And last but not least, we have a Buy Me a Coffee page, which is in our show note links. If you want to donate to us, you can. Great. If not, it's fine. Keep listening for free and for fun. We're happy for any and all support we receive. Okay, Sonia, plugs are out of the way. I don't even know where to start here. How about Bo DeMeo being fired a week before the show premiered.
How about that?
Essentially the showrunner, creator of X-Men 97, not creator of X-Men the animated series, fired pretty unceremoniously by Disney. Doesn't get to be part of the media rollouts, doesn't get to give interviews. He deletes his social media. Mm-hmm. He might be back on social media. I haven't checked. But that, like, how about that for a wacky opening chess move in the new era of X-Men 97?
Yeah. How about it?
I mean, you know, I dug deep on Reddit and Twitter to see what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could go yourself and look to see. It's all just wild speculation. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like repeating it.
It seems like he was fired for being a bad person.
Maybe. They, you know, I think the official Disney press release said that they had a parting of the ways for creative reasons.
Uh-huh.
The scandalous stuff was a lot of what you alluded to. It's like, oh, he wasn't easy to work with.
Right. He treated people poorly.
Yeah. He had a bad reputation on the Witcher series, which he wrote for, apparently.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he did write these first two episodes we're going to talk about. I think he wrote, I don't know if he wrote all the episodes for season one.
I know, that's
here.
Where, like, the creative differences part is like, well, but it probably didn't really have to do with the content of the show, because yeah. He did write these episodes and they were good.
Yeah, the first two are awesome. I hear episode 3, which we have not seen, but they saw in the premiere, is like even better than episodes 1-2, which blows my mind.
But, you know, I mean, that's the world we live in today. You can't get away with just being
like brilliant or something.
A horrible coworker.
Yeah. You have to, you know, you have to be a nice person and get along with your coworkers and treat people with respect. I mean, there's consequences. But again, I mean, is that the reason why he was like, oh, we don't know for sure. Maybe one day he'll give an interview and, you know, spill the tea, as they say. I don't know what to say about Bowden Mayo other than that he knocks it out of the park with the first two episodes here for sure.
He's not the sole writer, though, is he?
He's the head writer. The showrunner.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel bad for Bo. I don't, you know what happened there. I mean, I also feel bad if he did treat people badly at the writing staff. I feel bad for them. You know, so whatever happened, it's a bad situation. And in my mind, when I was reading that stuff, I was like, you know, this is typical. Like, X-Men, it's never without drama. You know, it's never like a... It's just, there's always something weird with the X-Men universe. Like, for instance, the movies. You know, the first X-Men 1 and 2 were awesome. And then Bryan Singer quits, and Fox is like, kind of like, they don't believe in the franchise. And they kind of, you read stuff about how they wanted to kill off the series in a weird way. And X-Men 3 was so bad. You know, it's like, that was like constantly the history of the X-Men. Like, there's something really, some great momentum going, and then something weird happens that derails it, and you're just sort of left as a fan holding the bag, knowing that it just could have been so much better.
Mm.
And that's, you know, been like the recent modern history of X-Men and like other media outside comic books. I'm sure it actually probably applies to comics too. People get very annoyed about the direction X-Men goes and its endless comic run. So here I felt like some of those vibes, you know, like here's this new animated series. Oh my God, I can't believe it. And the showrunners canned for some insane reason. So, and like, what does that mean for the future of the series? I mean, it turns out the future of the series is probably looking good. as of today, recording this podcast Wednesday night, the reviews are like insanely good. Fan reaction seems to be great. This does not have the mediocre stink of like the latest Marvel Disney Plus projects on TV or movie projects at all. It's just like completely, the assignment was met and exceeded in terms of like what they're trying to produce here. So, and apparently season 2 is in the bank on some level, like at least it's all written. Actually, I even think the voice actors recorded all their parts for it too. And then season 3 is in production. So the show is going to carry on. And we will carry on too. Almost endlessly, it seems. So that's a lot of the backstory of the past couple of weeks anyway. I mean, like, as we've been leading up to today, there's been a ton of clips released online showing off cool scenes from the show. I kind of regret watching a lot of them.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, when they happen again, when you see the episode, it's like, oh yeah, I saw when they fight the Sentinels, you know, for instance. But outside of that, it's been exciting. I'm excited. Are you excited?
That didn't bother me. I don't feel like I was spoiled by any of those.
You don't watch as many clips as I did.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Those opening credits were so exciting.
Yeah. Well, it starts with the Marvel animation logo. And by the way, the first episode is called To Me, My X-Men, mm-hmm. one of the more iconic X-Men phrases. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was definitely uttered by Professor X in the original animated show. I feel like I've read it in the comics, too. It's akin to Avengers Assemble. Mm-hmm. They've got this new Marvel animation logo, which is pretty cool because it showed like the 1960s animated Spider-Man, the 60s Fantastic Four animated, Wolverine from the animated series, Silver Surfer, they give a shout out to, we also did an episode on Silver Surfer, by the way, which you can find in our archives, and they do a tribute to their latest What If show. Which apparently still does good ratings for them. And by the way, Storm is going to be featured in one of the What If episodes next season. I don't know if it's like X-Men. It has to be X-Men Task Storm, I'm assuming. Because as we know, the Marvel What If, it's all based on like the movie characters, yeah. But there's no Storm in the MCU right now. So
right.
Unless they're doing Halle Berry or something, it's going to be Allison Seeley Smith's version. So we get that. And then, as you were saying, the new X-Men intro, which is a lot like the old X-Men intro.
Yeah.
But sort of like done up in the new animation. The famous theme song itself, too, is like a bit in a, I'd say like a techno style. Like they techno it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not the same song, which I think they should have done, by the way.
It's
nitpick number one.
It's the same song. It's basically the same song.
I think they should have. It was cool. They brought back Larry Houston, who was like the lead director animator of the original series, to direct the sequence, uh-huh. which was awesome. Like, yeah. Let him do it. And it's more or less the same, except they add a few like title cards to characters like Morph. Mm-hmm. In episode two, they add Magneto. I don't think he's in episode one as the title card. They change the order around of some of the characters as they appear. They add a sequence of there's a sequence of Morph being haunted by Mr. Sinister, for instance, to mm-hmm. give you a taste of that backstory. And Professor X is still in the credits as the main character.
Right.
Despite his quote-unquote death.
Well, he's not dead.
Right, he's not dead. And then it's like when they're all like running at each other before the logo appears, we see, like, I think they sub in Lady Deathstrike for, that's some like weird like pink alien guy in the original, some like nameless character. They sub in Lady Deathstrike there. I don't know if they made any other changes as far as that goes. And Magneto's still on the bad guy's side too. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's just like they're just keeping it like the original and that's that, or if it's a sign that Magneto will be flipping back to the bad guys. So, I mean, I think he will.
Yeah, he will.
Eventually. But and then they add, so then you see the silver X-Men logo in the classic font, and then they add a sort of like gold 97 button.
So cool.
Yes. I loved it.
Me too.
Sonia, how does this first episode begin?
So we open up on downtown New York City. We see the Twin Towers. The lights are glittering. We go up to Times Square real quick, and we see our old friends, the Morlocks, Callisto and Leech, hiding out as there's like cop cars flashing their lights around. And I think maybe they're doing like a little bit of an homage to like that area of New York City in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like before Rudy Giuliani became mayor of New York City.
Cleared out all the sex movie theaters.
Yeah. Like for many decades before that, Times Square was like notorious for being very seedy and having like a bunch of like pornography, not just like houses, like,
well, sex shops.
Not just sex shops, though, but like live performance venues.
Well, yeah, and prostitutes.
Like, so
it's funny how he like cleaned out all the seedy elements of Times Square, but what it was replaced with is shitty for an entirely different reason.
Yeah, now it's like Disney World. I mean,
it's worse than Disney World. It's just like,
no New Yorker ever really wanted to go through Times Square at that time or this time.
Yeah.
In that way, it hasn't changed.
Maybe Times Square was awesome in the 1930s or something.
Maybe. You avoid it if you can.
And Leech and Callisto are trying to avoid it as well, too.
Yeah. Then we get like a TV newscast catch-up sort of thing where Henry Gyrick, who is described as a former NSA agent.
Which he was definitely not in the NSA in the original series. He's in something called like the Defense Agency or something.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah. It's funny how they sort of updated it here to make it a little more realistic.
So he had, what, like 25 years in jail or something?
Yeah, 25 to life, maybe. I don't know.
The alleged assassination of Professor X. Everyone does believe that the assassination attempt was successful and that Professor X is dead.
Right, but in reality, he's in outer space somewhere with Lilandra in the Shi'ar Empire.
Right, which is much nicer for him.
Yes. He'll be fine.
For they share a bond deeper than love.
Right. And famously, very advanced technology. He'll be healed. He'll be okay.
Right. Anyway, meanwhile, the Friends of Humanity are back at it. they've captured...
They're up to no good.
Roberto de Costa, Sunspot, and they have a collar on him, and they're talking about how they're getting $10,000 for every mutant they catch. And so Sunspot is trying to, like, negotiate with them. He's like, listen, if you want money, like, I got plenty of money. Don't, like, worry about it, you know? And they're like, no, we don't even care about the money. It's, like, really an ideological battle for them because they do want all the mutants off the streets and dead.
Right. Sunspot voiced by Guy Agostini. Mm. We're going to try to shout out as many of the voice actors as we can as we go through here. He is a new addition to the cast. I'm excited to see Sunspot. He's always been a cool character. Introduced in the New Mutants in the 1980s. We talked about him a little bit in the New Mutants episode we did a million years ago as well. Go check that out.
He was also in one of the other... Ooh, my memory is really failing me on this one. He appeared in some of the other series that we've covered.
Yeah, probably. He might have been in Wolverine and the X-Men. I don't know. He's in some of the X-Men movies too, in like Days of Future Past.
That's true.
He's like shows up and dies in one of the bad pasts or futures.
Anyway, I'm happy to see him here. It looks like he's not going to be like a main character.
Yeah, they're giving him a real characterization though.
But yeah. He had a good part in this.
He's being introduced in much the same way that introduced many of their characters, like Warren Worthington was introduced sort of like he's given like a full character arc and story, but not as part of the main team necessarily.
Right. He's just like spotlighted in an episode. So we have like an understanding of where he fits into their universe. Anyways, so it doesn't work and they're going to continue to hold him. And the Friends of Humanity now have these like hand cannon weapons.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Claw from the Black Panther villain. He's got some kind of like robot laser arm.
Right. They basically like hijacked technology from a sentinel.
Yeah. And that's sort of the background of this first episode is that the Friends of Humanity have somehow been armed with sentinel technology and the X-Men don't know how they're getting it or where it comes from. And that's sort of the big mystery going on here. It makes them much more dangerous. Before you know it, storm clouds appear.
This is so awesome. This entrance is awesome. Right.
So Allison Seeley Smith returning a storm blasts through this like big like skylight window they have, as many villains do have in all these superhero things.
Yeah, for some reason.
Some place where Batman or Spider-Man can come crashing through. In this case, it's Storm. And, you know, the Friends of Humanity are pretty gnarly villains. Like, they're kind of brave. Like, I ain't afraid of you, you witch. Like, they're just, like, and they know who she is, too.
Yeah.
She's not unknown to them. And she's like, then you are a fool. The drama of Storm has not been dialed down one notch.
Nope.
And it's a lot of fun.
Bishop also comes in with her. He's got his guns blasting. The two of them get blasted.
Bishop voiced by Isaac Robinson Smith.
Oh, yeah.
So not the original Bishop guy.
I like this iteration of Bishop, though.
Yeah, it's fine.
And then
I'm probably going to say, though, for all the recast main characters, I have a... I'm just going to say it now so I don't have to keep mentioning. I have a preference for the original voice actors. And obviously we know a lot of them can't be with us because they passed away, or maybe they've aged out of the parts. But they brought back as many as they could. But, like, for instance, like, I'll just say a stupid one, like the Sentinel voices. Like, I love the Sentinel voices from the original series.
Uh-huh.
And they do a close approximation in this episode, but, you know, to me it's, like, not quite the same. Same thing with Gyrick. They have a new guy do Gyrick and Bolivar Trask. Like, I don't know. I hear the difference in my mind, but I'm a super fan, so.
For me, the Sentinels were good enough.
Right. Yeah, none of this is bad. I'm just... I don't know.
Like, by contrast, it's like the voices that they kept the same, you know, which we'll get to, Rogue and Wolverine, most notably.
Yeah.
The voice actors are the same, but they sound way different than they did in the original show.
Yes.
But that doesn't bother you because you know that they're the same actors and you wanted them to not be replaced.
Yeah, of course.
But they're still playing themselves, like, at that same age.
I know.
And it, like, doesn't match up anymore.
Listen, what are you going to do? They deserve to be on the show.
No, I'm not, like...
They're awesome people.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah,
I do agree with you.
Right.
You know, just, like, your ear definitely hears the difference there.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay.
But it is them, so I'm not going to, like, complain. I mean, I'm not going to complain about it.
And their voice acting is still, like, very high caliber.
Right, yeah, their voice acting is great. Their performance is great. They just sound different. The next guy to come blasting in is Cyclops. Well, Storm and Bishop kind of get shot down.
Yeah.
And it looks bad for them. But then Cyclops, now voiced by Ray Chase, replacing the great Norm Spencer, who does a good job emulating Norm Spencer, you know, channeling his performance in his own way. He shoots his way in. He says, his name is Cyclops, and I'm definitely one of the good guys. He sort of gets Sunspot behind him, and throughout the first episode, Cyclops is using his optic blasts in very cool ways that we hadn't quite seen before.
That's true. He uses them to kind of, like, push himself into different places. I guess it's faster than running.
Yeah. He shoots the ground and sort of slides around the room. It's really awesome. And then you also see him use his vaunted hand-to-hand skills. He's an awesome hand-to-hand fighter, and he's, like, beating the shit out of these Friends of Humanity guys. He even punches one guy, and you see blood fly out of his mouth. So that's an interesting thing to note in Marvel animation.
I like the detail that he has to touch the side of his visor.
Yeah.
To, like, control the blasts. And also, I really noticed the sound design on his blasts. It reminded me, like, very closely of the X-Men video game.
The arcade game, not specifically, right? The X-Men arcade game, not the Sega Genesis video game. Or both.
Both.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're kind of right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's a different optic blast sound. I hate to be this guy. I prefer the original optic blast sound.
No, I like this one because it's fine. Video game connection.
Right.
Anyway, so he's sliding around the room. He's punching guys. And he, like, eventually gets... roped in by, like, a couple of the Friends of Humanity guys.
They've got one of those rope guns.
Right. And they take his visor off him, and he's like, no, I surrender. He, like, acts like it's a panic for him to lose the visor.
Right.
And then he says, not, and bless them.
Right. So, again, that's sort of like a throwback to the original series. They had that joke.
Very timely in the 90s.
Right. So the X-Men win this round. Sunspot is saved. Like, they cut away, and you see a Daily Bugle blowing in the wind. This is something that's on the trailer. You know, among the little spoilers on the newspaper, it says, is Spider-Man a mutant? Which I like that as a question in this world, that it's not like Spider-Man has good press to begin with, but now people are going to add anti-mutant bias to him as well to sort of make his life even more. And it also speaks to the shittiness of the double standard of the Marvel universe in general, where there's heroes like the Avengers who are celebrated, and presumably the Fantastic Four too. Mm-hmm. They got superpowers the good way. They didn't get it by being born a mutant, which seems to activate the, like, bigotry lights in so many millions of people around the world.
They got it in a freak accident instead of a freak accident at birth. So
somehow that makes them not it doesn't enrage other people. Back at the X-Mansion, we see Gambit introduced, now voiced by AJ Locasio, who's doing again, is like doing a Chris Potter performance, like he's channeling Chris Potter here. Mm-hmm. Gambit is cooking beignets
in a crop top.
His haircut's also a little different too.
Yeah, some of the characters, I mean, we didn't really even talk about the animation yet. Like,
right.
Some of the characters got, like, a slight redesign.
Yeah, hairstyles.
They try to definitely go for the same, like, outfits and type of styles that they would have had. It is, like, a heavier line quality, like, the outlining. Mm. It's, like, a black outline that stands out a lot more than the original.
Yeah.
The original is much thinner.
Well, let's get into it. What do you think of the animation overall? Because I've read a lot of stuff online today where people saying the animation looks terrible. And I was surprised that people had that reaction.
It looks terrible in what way?
They don't like the way it looks. They say it looks rough. And that was, like, a common thing I saw. And I disagree. I think it looks great. And it looks, like, to me, it looks like a lot of modern cartoons I've seen, too. The style of it.
I was reading, I wish I could remember what the source was to say it out loud here, but I can't, that they were really trying their best to emulate what the style, not just the style of this series, but, like, if it had continued into history, like...
Right. How the animation
to, like,
would have progressed.
Place false, like, constraints on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
To make it more realistic to the time period that it would have been animated in.
Yeah.
If it was actually, like, coming out in 1997.
And I also read that a lot of it was hand-drawn, that they didn't really, like, a lot of people just assumed it was an entire CGI.
Some parts of it are.
So, yeah, a few, like, sequences are. This is, like, a dance club sequence. But it is hand-drawn from those parts, too, which is interesting.
I mean, I think it's interesting that people have that criticism that that the animation is terrible. Like, I wonder if they have seen the original series, if they did that.
I think these are people who are, like, have not watched the original series, don't really care about it. They're distrustful of Marvel right now. They just assume Marvel's going to be bad, no matter, like, what they're putting out. I think it's, like, a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
People just, like, thrown out. shitty comments. Just for the hell of it.
I feel like the animation is like the best case scenario. It's exactly what I would have hoped for. It like follows the style and the direction of the original X-Men animated series, like the first, you know, couple seasons, not the last one. But it also updates it in certain ways to like make it more modern.
You know what it is? I'd say it's like a combination of the original X-Men, X-Men Evolution, and Wolverine the X-Men. It's like got elements of all three in a strange way.
Really? I don't see X-Men Evolution or Wolverine and the X-Men in this at all.
I'd say it's got like a bit similar color palette to X-Men Evolution. I don't know. I just feel like there are shots that reminded me of all three shows.
Okay.
That's all
I didn't enjoy the character design in those two shows.
Right, but the character design
is much closer to the original series.
It is, but the character design also has been updated. I just think it has elements. I think it just looks more or less like a modern cartoon. It doesn't look like dated or intentionally retro in any really like overly powerful way.
Action sequences are better than what you get from like season 5 X-Men.
The action looks kinetic and smooth when they get into that. I mean, it's like, and again, it looks a bit stilted in anime when they're sitting around the conference rooms talking. But again, that's like stuff we've seen across a whole ton of animation and different types of shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the animation's really good. It's not distracting to me. It's not bad in any way. I'm very pleased with it.
I wish it's like a 9.5 out of 10 for me, actually.
Mm. Yeah.
Like the only thing that I really get hung up on is like that line quality. Like I do wish they had just been a little less heavy handed with it. But
I mean, in my mind, the ideal animated show, I want to bring the artwork of the comic books to life. So I want to see Jim Lee's artwork and I want to see it animated. And I know that's like a very hard task. And that's what they sort of attempted to do in the original series.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like their production budget was low and they can't, only so many frames per second. It's expensive to add more like movement and stuff in certain images. But the point is like, that's what I would like pick an artist and like bring it to life from a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, it's got some of that, but it's like mainly like,
the artist they picked was the original artist of the original X-Men Task series.
Yeah, so. Sort of. But it's also, there's like anime elements to it, too.
Yeah. Okay.
With like facial expressions and posing.
Yeah. I mean, my one criticism was just a nitpick. It's only because I feel like I have to criticize something for some reason. It's great. I like it.
Yeah, it's fine. All right. So Cyclops is criticizing Gambit for not being on that mission, which is a little strange to me. I mean, I guess they're trying to establish that Cyclops is now the team leader, and the team is not exactly united behind Cyclops all the time. They're not, like, following his marching orders. They're sort of doing their own thing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, Gambit's sort of making excuses. Like, oh, you and Storm, you're powerful enough. You had no problem.
Mm-hmm. You got the kid back safe. Everything's fine.
Right.
Yeah. In comes Rogue, voiced by Lenore Zahn.
So Rogue is, so they got Lenore Zahn back, who did her voice originally. She sounds different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't. It's to me, it's like you could just lazily say she sounds older, but to me, that's not quite it. She just sounds sort of like a different voice a little bit, you know? So, and I'm sure it does just simply have to do with age. You know, her
everyone's vocal cords change a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, it's fine though. It's not like she sounds like, in real life, I'm sure she's in her 60s or something. She doesn't sound like a 60-year-old woman, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
She just doesn't sound like the same performance of Rogue we got in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So, distracting maybe for some, like for me, not at all. It's fine. And I thought she's still fun and brings a lot of energy to the part. So I had no problem with Lenore Zahn here at all.
Next, Morph comes in, voiced by J.P. Karliak. I hope I said his name right.
Right, this is a new voice actor doing Morph.
But he comes in as Professor X walking around, and Professor X is voiced by Ross Marquand.
Right, I believe Cedric Smith might have passed away, I think, or just might simply be too old to do the part for Professor X. So he is not involved in this series, and which is sad. I mean, like, I wish he was around because he had a perfect Professor X voice.
Right, so he comes in, he's talking as if he were Professor X. He makes fun of Cyclops for being no fun. And Cyclops is like, oh, come on, Morph, stop being a creep. And then he, like, changes back into himself. This is another huge difference from the original X-Men. His, like, default face is not, like, a human man.
It's like blank face or no face from Dick Tracy or something.
Right.
Or he looks like the chameleon from Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, exactly. His face is gray and he has no, like, nose protrusion.
Yeah. which I guess is his true face. But I mean, we do see him later in the show have his traditional morph human face as well. But I guess that's when he's out in public.
Right. He has to, he's trying to fit in with the crowd there.
Yeah.
Whereas here he's just at home.
I mean, you know, some people are annoyed about the changes to morph. It's, you know, it hasn't come up yet. You know, I think Bo DeMeo said in an interview that he's like non-binary.
Right.
But I don't even know if that's going to explicitly ever be even said on the show.
I feel like they kept his personality the same, though. He always was like a little bit of like a trickster, kind of like a little sneaky.
And in the title sequence, they allude to his dark past with Mr. Sinister as well, too, that there's something kind of wrong with him.
Right.
Like in terms of his emotional trauma. So.
And he's good friends with Wolverine. Yeah. See that play out.
It's right. A lot of the morph characters there. And hey, and he got his title card he gets some respect for a change
good
too.
For him.
Right. He's promoted to regular X-Man.
Next, Jean comes in, voiced by Jennifer Hale, who was also Jean in Wolverine and the X-Men.
Right, replacing Catherine Disher, who's on the show as Dr. Valerie Cooper.
Right, and she saves Cyclops from one of Gambit's beignets that he had charged up and thrown at Cyclops, and she, like, telepathically sends it out the window.
Gambit did throw a frying explosive in Cyclops' face.
Not cool.
If Jean had not come in the door, then who knows what would have happened. I guess he would have figured out how to save himself, but still.
Right. So she's trying to be the peacemaker. We see that she's very obviously pregnant. Mm-hmm. She's trying to get everyone to just get along.
It's kind of a funny reveal shot of Jean, of her being pregnant.
The outfit she's wearing.
Yeah, it's like a sexy pan-up of Jean. She's in all like yoga pants, you know, tight outfit, showing off her pregnant belly. You know, Jean just wants everyone to get along. Again, like, this whole scene is just introduced the old gang and established that Cyclops is not doing the greatest job being the leader. He doesn't have everyone, like, falling behind him, which is sort of like a running theme throughout the original series as well.
Because he's too strict.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I wouldn't even say it's that so much in this episode anyway.
He's, like, yelling at them all for being lazy and stuff. He's trying to, like, be... I don't know, his, like, motivation tactics are, like, strict dad, you know?
A little bit, but he kind of realizes it's not working, and he changes course pretty quickly,
That's true.
People seem to cut him some slack, and he cuts them some slack, too, as well.
Right, they remember that they're all friends.
Right. Beast, well, we see Sunspot wake up. Well, he's not even called Sunspot yet.
That's true.
He's Roberto. He wakes up in the, you know, the X-Mansion lab somewhere down by the Danger Room, and Beast is there listening to Mozart doing some computer work. And it's George Buzza back as Beast.
Yeah.
Weirdly, George Buzza sounds younger.
He sounds the same to me.
To me, he sounded a little more springier in his voice. Hmm. Great to have him back, though. He's one of the all-time greatest characters. And then Jubilee is there. She's going to sort of introduce herself to Roberto here. They're seemingly close in age. Mm-hmm. And Jubilee is now voiced by Holly Chu.
Right. And this is like an echo of... when Jubilee is first taken in by the X-Men, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They do a lot of that with Jubilee and Roberto in this episode. Mm-hmm. They hint back to the Night of the Sentinels two-part premiere in season one.
Right.
So I like Sunspot's character because he doesn't want to hang out with the X-Men. He just wants to go home.
He thinks they're nerds.
Yeah. They're like trying to introduce him to this world of and like what they fight for and like there's shit about with the Sentinels and the Friends of Humanity. He's like, listen, I just don't care. Like, really, I'll pay you guys off. Do you guys need money?
He's like, I'll pay for the save, you know?
Right.
And Storm and Cyclops come in.
Storm is not happy with Roberto's attitude here.
Right. And actually, Jubilee isn't either. She's like, you know, we're like fighting to keep people safe, like mutants safe, even like rich yuppies like you.
Yeah, she calls him a yuppie, which I don't think is exactly an accurate description of him.
No, he's just a rich kid.
He's like a
she
super
calls him arrogant,
super rich kid. He's like another, you know, one of these like Warren Worthington types.
Right. But basically, Cyclops explains, like, look, the guys who have that Sentinel technology are still out there. We didn't manage to catch them. And if you go back out there, they're going to just hunt you down again, so you're not safe. So you have to, like, stay here for a day while we try to figure out how to keep you safe when you leave. And he's like, oh, so now I'm being held hostage by you.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, I just like the whole... Right now, it's becoming a bit of a trope of, like, introducing a new X-Man into the X-Mansion and them getting their feet wet. I mean, you see it in a lot of the movies with various characters. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing it again here at Sunspot. It's fun. Yeah. I like this premise. And before you know it, they just, like, stick him in the Danger Room. again, this seems
he's like, oh, I hope there's something to do around here, you know. And Jubilee's like, come on, and she brings him to the danger room.
I mean, he does think he's being held. He is being held against his will, and they immediately stick him in the danger room, which is a room called the danger room, which is pretty fucked up when you think about the X-Men's actions here. And you know, like obviously, the danger room's a lot of holograms, hard light technology from the Shi'ar, but Sunspot thinks it's just like a big video game, and he has a funny line where he's like, video games are for nerds. Like, I'm not impressed by this stuff. And we see like a hologram of Magneto, now voiced by Matthew Watterson, who does a good job channeling the original voice actor who passed away. Mm. I think his name was David Hemblin. Forgive me if I'm getting some of the names wrong. As me and you get older here, our ability to remember names of people that are very close to us disintegrate just as much as cast member names of our favorite TV shows from 30 years ago. Jubilee, she's like, again, it's like they're doing a lot of exposition dumping here. Mm-hmm. So she's explaining the backstory between like who Magneto is, who Professor X was, and like what their differing philosophies are. And she's also sort of like prodding Roberto to show his powers off.
She's just asking him nicely, really, because she's kind of being like, come on, we're friends. Like, show me what you can do.
Can you fly? Can you teleport?
But she's also like launching dangerous like stuff at him to try to make him reveal his powers in like self-defense.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. He doesn't actually do it.
No, he doesn't. We don't really even see him use his powers at all in this episode. Much like, again, the original Nine Sentinels, Wolverine tackles Roberto. Well, I guess in the original Night of the Sentinels, Wolverine tackles Gambit, and Jubilee thinks she's saving Gambit by shooting Wolverine.
Right.
Even though they're just fooling around. But here Wolverine tackles Roberto and very, like, scarily, like, shoots his first and third claw around his head.
Like, on either side of his head, yeah. Roberto thinks that it's part of the Danger Room simulation.
Yeah.
So then, like, Wolverine turns it off and he realizes that it's not. And he has, like, a moment of terror.
Right. Funny. So, whatever. Regardless, Roberto is not convinced. The X-Men are trying their best here, and he's just not buying it. Cut to Cyclops. He's in Professor X's old study, and he's examining, like, a photograph of the X-Men in their original outfits. The original X-Men, the Fab Five.
Mm-hmm.
Beast, Angel, Iceman, Cyclops, and Jean. I mean, again, the joke here is that, like, how Angel fits in the continuity has always been messed up, where when we originally saw him in the X-Men animated series, the X-Men didn't seemingly know him. But then, like, later in the original series, it is shown that Angel was on the original team. So that's all very confused. And they're continuing the confusion here. And they're also going to, like, continue to sort of, like, screw around with the continuity as well, as we'll see coming up, I think, in episode 2. Cyclops is talking to Dr. Valerie Cooper, voiced by Catherine Disher, who was the original Jean Grey, and she's like speaking to him like a televideo wall thing, and she's working out. It reminded me again of the first season where you see the female president like working out and giving orders to Gyrick and Trask or something from the Oval Office. Cyclops is mad that Dr. Cooper is like downplaying the idea that Sentinel technology is out there in the hands of the Friends of Humanity.
He's being very short with her. He's like kind of rude, actually.
Right. And she's insisting like, oh, you and the X-Men should trust me. And he just doesn't. He doesn't trust the government in this case. Like, he doesn't trust their motivations and like what they're keeping from him, which is like a fun little like subplot that they're carrying along here of the X-Men in general being wary of their like allies who seem tenuous at best at this point. So, and also Cyclops is asking about Dr. Bolivar Trask. And like where he is. They've got Gyrick in prison, but where's Trask? She's not giving him like straight answers.
So he hangs up on her.
Right. She says, oh, you should trust us. He's like, yeah, never mind. And then we see Professor X's death certificate.
Yeah, 11/11/96.
Right. So I'm assuming that's like the day of the season finale of season 5 is probably what that date refers to. Cyclops is still doubting himself. Then like Jean sort of like snaps him out of it. She's like, remember when we were kids and we would run away from the danger room by the lake and just be like making out and stuff?
And Cyclops is like, oh yeah. Jean is basically like campaigning to get him to quit the X-Men. She's like, you know, we have to like enjoy our lives. We have a baby on the way. Like, I don't want to be doing this shit anymore.
Yeah.
We have like a baby to take care of, basically.
Right. And then before you know it, a basketball smashes through Professor X's office, knocking over the old photograph, and then you like cut to you see Jubilee blasting Wolverine into the basketball hoop. She's very mad because apparently Wolverine scared off Roberto. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Roberto was like, his head was nearly clawed open. And Cyclops orders Wolverine to go sniff out Roberto, and then he's like, you know, you better take the whole team too. You're all sort of to blame for this. You've all like done a bad job of integrating this guy into our lives here.
Right.
Overall, the writing is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, it's all been pretty logical and makes sense, and it's kind of interesting, like, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the writing is great, I would say, actually, for these first two episodes. Not just pretty good, but just, like, the little connective details from scene to scene are awesome. Because it's like, you can almost question, it's like, what are they doing with Sunspot here? Like, this all seems, like, stupid and a waste of time. It turns out, yeah, it is. Like, they're just, they're fucking up. They're not, like, they're not doing a good job of like showing him around and making him feel safe.
Well, Wolverine like talks back to Cyclops because he doesn't like being bossed around, and he says to Cyclops, you know, the worst part of the professor being gone is you. And he like storms off, but he does like go, he completes his like exactly what Cyclops was telling him to do.
Right. And Cyclops doesn't take it too personally at this point either anymore.
Right.
It did seem a little like you feel by the end of season five that Cyclops and Wolverine are friends,
mm-hmm.
and that they're really actually quite good buddies. So I feel like they're trying to like scale that back just a little bit, like hit a little bit of a reset button to give some antagonism back between the characters. And that's what that scene is trying to do, I believe. And that, you know, and I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So Morph and Rogue and Wolverine and Gambit go out to a dance club. Because that's where Wolverine tracks Roberto to. And he says, all right, I can't find him in here. There's too many smells or something.
I like that.
So Rogue and Gambit go up on like a catwalk sort of thing. And Rogue is like sadly looking at all the people like brushing up against each other, dancing and their skin touching. And Gambit starts like holding her hand through her gloves, both of their gloves, I guess.
And he kind of hits on it. He gives one of his cheesy lines, and she likes it, though.
Yeah.
She's not tired of him. And we see Wolverine drinking a beer at the bar, which is, I don't know if we ever saw him drink alcohol in the original series.
I think we did.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. He's, like, in some bar in Canada or something.
But I don't know if we see him drinking, though.
Yeah, maybe not.
And Morph is trying to, like, you know, Wolverine's in a bad mood, and Morph, like, sort of points to the reasons why. And he turns into Jean, and he's like, oh, like, Wolverine, are you upset because of my exhaustingly perfect relationship I have with Scott and the fact that we're having a baby and that we're probably going to leave the X-Men and leave you forever? And Wolverine is very annoyed by this.
Right. So now the Friends of Humanity do come into the club. Roberto.
Well, Wolverine, like, the way he's annoyed is, like, he sort of changes the subject by saying, it's like, don't you get it, Morph? They're leaving the team.
Right. Morph wasn't really the one who had suggested that. Wolverine is the one who, like, figured it out
Right. Kind
of first. And, like, it's a big reveal.
Yeah.
So then the Friends of Humanity do come into the club. Roberto is dancing with these, like, glow sticks.
Dancing by himself.
Yeah. But Jubilee is close by, and she's like, come on, like, we gotta go. And he's like, oh, one dance and then I'll come willingly, I promise. So she's like, all right. And she's like using her fireworks a little bit while she's dancing, which, like,
that's fun.
Kind of dangerous, no?
Well, I mean, yeah, she's in control of them and she's not ashamed to be a mutant, and it's part of her cool, like, expression.
Right.
I liked it. I thought that was a fun scene. Let Jubilee dance, Sonya, with her fireworks.
No, it is fun. She's trying to convince him that it's worth it to, like, come be with the X-Men.
Right. If I saw someone at a big dance club using their fireworks powers, I'd be really impressed.
Better than glow sticks.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So Wolverine, he spots the Friends of Humanity.
Right, you think there's going to be some big fight, but then they don't really show it. But Wolverine's got a hat, a Friends of Humanity hat, and it's got, like, a claw through it. And he puts it on Roberto's head. He's like, don't you see? They're coming after you. We got to go now.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Cyclops and Storm go question Gyrick, voiced by Todd Haberkorn.
Right, a new guy doing Gyrick.
In jail. And they say that they can get his 25-year sentence down to 10 years if he cooperates and tells them where the new Sentinel tech is coming from.
I like the situation where the X-Men have some kind of like weird authority in the world, like, connected through this Dr. Valerie Cooper character, where they're kind of like, you know, they've got...
They're cooperating with the government and vice versa.
Right, and they got some like power, you know, to do things. I guess the government realized that they have saved the Earth multiple times.
They've been deputized.
Right, they've been duly...
Like Batman.
Absolutely duly deputized. Gyrick, I mean, this is a cool scene because Gyrick like lays into Cyclops and tells him like his own personal philosophy and what he thinks is actually going on in the world. Because it's, he's saying that like, oh, you know, being friendly with mutants might like be in vogue now, but it's just a fad. And that normal people know that they're in danger of like, you know, being in extinction soon. And that they understand in their souls that tolerance is extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's just not intimidated by Cyclops in the slightest. And even Cyclops is trying to like offer him some weird deal where he's like, I'll reduce your 25-year sentence to 10 years if you just tell us where the Sentinel stuff is and where Dr. Trask is. But he's not playing ball. And that's when Jean enters the picture. She's back at the mansion on Cerebro.
It's always a bad idea. Cerebro is just always bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like an awesome invention, but it just goes south so quickly. So she enters his mind... Gyrick's mind, and like she's kind of causing him pain, but then she falls into this like psychic landscape.
I think she does get the information from him that she needs.
She does, right? Yeah, she does. I'm not exactly sure why she falls into this psychic landscape sort of
something deal. Like you said, Cerebro is bad news
because it's not like Gyrick has any kind of like psychic powers or anything.
No, not that I think. Like maybe that's a red herring. Like something weird's going on with Jean here. It's especially going to be evident by the end of episode two.
Right. She's in this, it's like a dream sequence almost while she's in Cerebro where she's no longer pregnant and she's in her X-Men outfit and she sees like a baby carriage off in the distance. And like there's...
Like some like sandy ghost character appears and is telling her, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Like who is that? I have no idea. Let us know if you have any ideas like who this sort of like weird
might be.
Apparition is. And then, like, the zombie head of Master Mold blasts out of the ground and is like, I am death. I'll kill you all. And, like, there's a big green light explosion and Jean can't stop it. And you kind of, like, see, like, this hell world she's in where there's a ton of, like, gravestones. And
the sky in the sequence has, like, that Kirby crackle. It's,
oh, yeah.
I like the animation on that. That was really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Jean's freaked out.
Jean's real freaked out. I mean, they kept it vague on purpose because it is a dream sequence. And, like, her takeaway when she wakes up from it and, like, talks about it is, like, ooh, that was a bad omen. Like, something bad is going to happen, you know?
So yeah.
And, I don't think we're supposed to know what that is.
But hey, points to Jean for not passing out.
Yeah, she stayed conscious.
But maybe it's not the real Jean. Maybe that's a sign. This is a Jean of a much hardier constitution. This whole next sequence, when I first... So we watched it early in the morning when we woke up.
You sprang out of bed and turned it on right away. Yeah.
I knew I couldn't go the whole day without watching it. I knew we were going to watch it again later before we recorded after work at night. Yeah, but I watched it first thing in the morning. And when I first saw it, I was confused because I thought this was like another Danger Room training mission. Because the X-Men are flying around the Blackbird about to go somewhere. And then like out of nowhere, a Sentinel comes out of the sky, like tears open the top of the Blackbird and they all go flying out.
No, it's that Jean did extract the information that she needed ultimately and told them like, oh, fly the Blackbird into the Sahara Desert. Yeah. That's where the
I'd missed that in the morning. I was too excited about everything happening. And this sequence is amazing. Like, you know, the plane has been ripped open. Cyclops is grabbed by a Sentinel in the middle of the sky. He's like shooting wildly and turning, he like cuts his head off and they're all like careening horribly towards the ground. I mean, luckily a bunch of people on the team can fly. And, you know, I was impressed by Morph turning into Archangel and saving Wolverine from the sky.
Storm and Rogue give each other like a little nod and they like catch everybody else who's falling except Cyclops. On the comms, he's like, great job, team. And then he, like, plummets himself towards the Earth, but uses his optic beam to cushion his landing, I guess.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
They're doing some great stuff with Cyclops.
That's
here.
One of those things that doesn't occur to you that he could do with his power set.
It might have shown some of that stuff in the comics, but they're really showing it off here. they're really drawing on a lot of like creative Cyclops stuff from the comics of the past, whatever, 30 years since the show was last made. And then they all sort of land in the desert and you get the iconic hero shot where they're all posing, to me, my X-Men.
Mm-hmm. It was great. Even though I saw it in the trailer, it was still great.
Yeah. It's super cool. I mean, like, they're just showing you, like, why the X-Men are great. You know, they're as good. I mean, they're definitely better than the Avengers in my mind, but, like, people love the Avengers now. Mm. So if you're not convinced in the X-Men, they're showing you, like, why they're as good as them in terms of being a badass team of cool people, cool and interesting people. Mm-hmm. Them gathering, to me, is way more interesting than the Avengers assembling.
I mean, inherently, the thing about the X-Men that's super different from the Avengers, aside from how they get their power sets,
yeah,
is that they're the underdog. Like, right, they're the heroes, but they're also the underdog in a way because they're oppressed by society and they choose to continue, like, being a force for good, like, despite the oppression by the very mm-hmm. people yeah, that they're trying to
it's
save.
It's a great story.
It's just so much more complex right. and interesting.
And satisfying. And they have way more style than the Avengers as people and individuals. It's just so much cooler. Mm-hmm. The idea that they're a team of, like, all these, like weird, cool, stylish people. this ending is a little strange and, like, ham-fisted. It's a cool action sequence, but just, like, the way this whole, like, story resolves itself is a bit sort of, like, clipped, I thought.
Okay, so Trask is there. He appears in front of Master Mold, and he really wants to just, like, kill them all. All these zombie sentinels, they're, like, in these piles of rubble, start waking up and attacking the X-Men. The music comes in.
Right, Trask presses a button, and they all come to life.
Rogue is, like, throwing around the robots, and Beast, like, gets inside the chest of one of the sentinels and starts controlling it, like, walking around as the sentinel.
A lot of this is the problem of season 5, where I feel like they resolve the Trask, Gyrick storylines in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those, I can't remember. I'm sorry to say, I haven't like re-binged season 4 and 5 lately because we were doing Batman every week. but I do feel like there was an episode where like Gyrick and Trask are kind of like they're running, they like live in the jungle or something and they just have nothing, you know, and they've just sort of been like driven out of America in a way. Mm-hmm. And like there's just like a sort of like a period on their story. And so here they've, again, I feel like they've probably like kind of reset it just a little bit.
Right. It's like they're revived, but only for one episode to kind of like
yeah.
tie it up and like maybe a little fan service to show us the Sentinels.
Yeah, I think that's a large part of it. Yeah.
I'm not mad about
no,
it.
No, it's fine.
I like the Sentinels.
Yeah, you can't expect people, even us, like I don't remember the exact details of like what had happened to Trask and Gyrick. Again, let us know on the Facebook and Reddit groups. Let us know if it makes sense that they would be out here based on like where we last saw them in the original series.
Well, Gyrick's not out there. He's in jail.
Yeah, he's in jail. Right. That makes more sense. But Trask, though, I feel like at times Trask was almost like helping the X-Men in the original series. Mm. Not quite, but he was, you know, when he knew his like butt was on the line, he was like, you know, especially in season 1, he wanted to stop Master Mold. Anyway, the action sequence is quite good. Again, it was like released online before the show came out. Mm-hmm. Where we see like Beast jump in like the middle of one of the machines and he controls it like a Evangelion
yeah.
thing. And Rogue is throwing him around. You know, we see them at work.
There's that one scene that's in the trailer that everybody was trying to speculate about where Gambit charges up Wolverine's claws.
Right. That happens at the end.
Like, isn't he going to explode? But I guess there's like a transference of the power because he times it. So he tells Morph bellies up, which means that he turns into, what's the guy's name?
Blob,
and like bounces off of him and then like slices the Sentinel's head off with an explosion. So right. I guess he just timed it perfectly so that the energy transferred into the metallic yeah. Sentinel.
A very, and Gambit throws his charged up staff at, this is a Master Mold towards the end of the action sequence.
Uh-huh.
And a very creative version of the fastball special with not having Colossus on the team.
Right.
But I guess Morph could have turned into Colossus, which I think he does in episode 2.
He does.
Anyway, we sort of skipped over the part where Storm arrives and the Sentinels are like, Omega level threat detected. And Storm is just slowly hovering towards the scene and she's blasting the sand with lightning, turning it to crystallized glass, which is awesome. And she just seems like really big and scary in the first couple episodes, actually.
Yeah.
And
well, they're making the point that she's really powerful.
Yeah.
Which
she
should be.
She sends a huge tornado at the Sentinels and they all fly up in the sky and then drop. I would say they drop harmlessly to the ground, but a lot of them fall very close to where the X-Men are standing. So that was lucky, I guess, that they didn't like squish them. you know, Master World comes to life. They're destroyed by Wolverine and Gambit. And he's pretty easily destroyed too. Like one of their greatest villains. This is the third or fourth time they're killing Master Mold, by the way. So they're pretty well versed in taking him out. Cooper arrives with UN troop forces, which I know like the UN has like peacekeeping humanitarian kind of soldiers in the real world. I don't know if they have like a special.
I don't know if soldier team would even really be the word for it.
Yeah, but you know, like you imagine them with like the blue helmets and everything. And the blue. Anyway.
Yeah.
So. Trask is arrested and he's sort of ranting at the X-Men saying like, oh, just because you stopped me, you know, humanity is not going to give up here. You have no idea what it feels like to be left behind by the future, which is kind of like a foreboding and interesting. Again, like the little philosophy of this X-Men world with like the various philosophical stances between the humans and the mutants is always like fun to like think about and put yourself in the shoes of in. Mm-hmm. And Cooper, again, she's still trying to earn Cyclops' trust. She's like, buttering him up. She's like, listen, Professor X would have been really proud of you today. But Cyclops gives credit to the team. And that's like,
he smiles a little.
Right.
And he appreciates what she's trying to do.
Right. And that's Cyclops' like big revelation he has at the end here, saying that like, I thought it was all on me to like lead the X-Men and make them great, but really it's not on me at all. It's a whole team thing. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're a team, the X-Men are going to be fine. And he's doing that, explaining that while they're all playing basketball together. I kind of skipped over C, and Jubilee meets Roberto. He's back at the X-Mansion. And she's explaining, again, giving one last pitch to, like, why he should stay with the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And she almost succeeds. She, like, touches on the idea that they're a family. And Roberto's like, oh, yeah, a family that accepts you, that'd be interesting. That'd be, like,
yeah,
nice.
He's receptive to that idea. She realizes that he hasn't even told his family that he's a mutant. And he shows, like, a little bit of his power. He,
right.
Like, charges up his one arm, and it's got that, like, Kirby crackle again.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But he doesn't really, like, do any kind of like
no
demo for her.
I thought it'd be
like
cool. Like it didn't happen. I thought it'd be cool if like the jacket sleeve burned away, but it doesn't. anyway, he leaves, he gives Jubilee his card and he's like, I got my own private jet and I'll let you fly it. Cause Jubilee's complaining that Cyclops doesn't let her fly the Blackbird.
Yeah.
Which was a funny like running gag in the original series. Mm-hmm. She always wanted to fly the planes. And she's really charmed by this. So perhaps a potential romance here.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I liked all the romance stuff going on in this episode, by the way. Between Jean, Scott, Wolverine, Jubilee,
the
Roberto.
Classic triangle.
Yeah. Rogue and Gambit. It's all there.
Yep.
Anyway, the basketball game. Cyclops seems a little looser, but you know, the Beast gets an alert saying that someone's breached Professor X's office. And it turns out it's Magneto. And again, we saw this in the trailers too. He's let the X-Men know that Professor X left everything in his will to him, and he's taking over the X-Men. Everything he built, everything he fought for, now belongs to me, my X-Men. Mm. And they're sort of like in disbelief as the episode ends. And the credits are like the old school, like 3D spinning models of each character. Updated, not the original thing they used back then.
Super cool.
It was awesome.
Love it.
I saw Avi Arad was one of the producers, which was weird. That he's still around Marvel in some capacity. I guess he had some sort of like strange ironclad contracts with certain properties. Eric and Julia Leewald and Larry Houston were shown as consulting producers, so that's fun. It was great. What an epic introduction.
A triumphant return.
Extremely triumphant return. You know, it's like, again, if you want to nitpick, they had to do a lot of exposition stuff.
I don't mind.
No, it's fine.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, they catch you up. You know, you don't have to like go back and dive into the original series to like understand what's going on. You could have a general sense of who the X-Men are and be perfectly fine watching this episode.
I do wonder a little, like if you have no background with the X-Men and this is just like the latest thing that Marvel's putting out, it's in the zeitgeist, people are talking about how it's really good, but like you have personally no history with it. I wonder if it's fun.
Well, I mean, it's not like episode one of the original X-Men cartoon, started with Professor X forming the team and introducing all the characters. It was kind of like in the middle of a story somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's sort of like what, and that's a better way to do it. Like origin stories are kind of boring and
agreed.
Tired. So Sonya, That was a lot of talking, but we're only at the halfway point here.
I know. I was going to say, actually, I think one of the other key differences that we didn't really mention is that they like really pack a lot into these episodes.
Well, and they're longer than this traditional 21-minute episodes.
Right, they're like 28 or something, yeah. Right? So
29-ish.
Like percentage-wise.
You're getting 7 to 8 minutes more of content.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's like, what, 30% more?
Yeah, and the story was well-paced, yeah.
So, I mean, there's that to it, but also it's made me wonder, like, just compared to the pace of like the older shows, if they feel like they need to ramp it up and cram more in than for modern audiences.
Yeah. Well, and there's only 10 episodes.
Right. That too. Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, original season one had 13, season two and three had like, I think close to 20 or over 20. And then it kind of like scaled back in 4 and 5, but so less than what they used to make. I'll tell you how I felt going into episode two this morning. Mm-hmm. When you were kind of like half watching because you were like making breakfast and like doing some work calls already. Mm-hmm. I was like fully invested. And my first thought was like, oh, episode one was good. Like I had like, again, I was like getting over my little, like getting used to the new voice actors and little nitpicks here and there. And just like wondering how I felt all about the animation and this and that. And I was like mostly fine with everything, but I was not prepared for how truly epic episode two was going to be. Like just knock my pants off kind of greatness in terms of the story and the dialogue and like what happens and the drama. Like I thought we were going to get like another, like, all right, you know, we're getting our feet wet. We're just like off the, maybe we'll be introduced to some new like minor villain and it's like a little problem they have to deal with kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Instead we get like a truly like dramatically like stakes rising episode two.
Yeah.
And
truly
this,
excellent.
This episode's called Mutant Liberation Begins, which is one of Magneto's classic lines from season one when he's first introduced in episode, you know, 3 or 4.
And he's in the main credits.
Now he appears in the main credits, which is a fun touch. And we open up on Coney Island, where there's a Coney Island Ferris wheel emergency going on.
Did you ever worry about this happening when you were a kid?
Never.
Really?
A Ferris wheel?
Yeah.
Roller coasters, yes.
The Ferris wheel, like, coming off of its stand and, like, rolling away?
It never seemed dangerous to me because it's a slow, boring ride. Now I do. Now that you bring it up, I feel like...
I used to think about it when I was a kid sometimes because there is one at Coney Island that's, like, really enormous. Like, yeah. So huge.
The Wonder Wheel, right?
Yeah, the Wonder Wheel.
Yeah.
Dino's Wonder Wheel.
Shout out to Dino, the sponsor of this week's podcast.
I wish.
Go to Coney Island.
Anyway, there is a disaster with the Wonder Wheel, apparently.
Luna Park.
And Magneto has to like save all the humans as it starts to crash. Well, he doesn't have to, I guess, but he does.
Right. We're seeing a new Magneto. He's out there saving humans. And he's got a brand new outfit. It's the outfit he had in the 80s.
I don't like this outfit. I'm just going to say.
Yeah, it's comic accurate. It does look ridiculous.
He has his shoulders out.
Yeah. He's got an enormous M on his chest. M for Magneto. It's like Alvin and the Chipmunks kind of like costumes they would wear.
Yeah.
You know, but he's so confident that pulls it off in his own way.
Yep.
I'm not opposed to like alternate Magneto outfits.
I'm not opposed to alternate. I just don't happen to like this particular one, but whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
So Cyclops is watching the news and he just like isn't convinced that all of that, like this new reality is reality for him. Basically, he's like, oh, did the professor just like not trust me to run the X-Men?
That's an interesting thought he has.
It is an interesting thought because in the
it does seem like kind of like fuck you, Cyclops. Magneto, who is actually my greatest foe, is going to be running the team.
He's taking it more gently than I thought he would. Honestly, like from the previous episode when Magneto just announces that he's inherited everything, I thought Scott was going to freak out,
yeah,
and get like really angry. But we don't see that.
Well, in the issue, it does make sense that he doesn't, because the reality is in the original series, Magneto is not really their greatest foe past season one.
Right.
At the end of season one, he's basically their friend.
Right. And he is Charles Xavier's oldest friend.
Right. And then in season two opens where he's lost with Professor X in the Shadowland and they're best friends throughout that entire season. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, we don't really see Magneto much in season three, if I remember. And then he weirdly comes back for the apocalypse, you know, time episodes, the vortex of time, Beyond Good and Evil series, where he's like on the side of Apocalypse, but And so he's like seemingly like a bad guy out of nowhere again.
Yeah.
That's weird. But then he says like at the end of that, he's like, actually, I knew you would betray me. And that's why. And he like joins forces with the X-Men to like defeat Apocalypse by the end of that. And then there is the Asteroid M episodes, which again, he's not like really the bad guy in that.
Right. It's just that they have differing ideologies about like what should happen with mutants in like the government and society at large.
I mean, we used to talk a lot about like we wish that they made Magneto the bad guy longer than they did in the original series, just because he's a great villain for them.
Right.
And they just kind of like, and they did it. I mean, it was interesting what they pulled off in the original series of like making him kind of a sympathetic figure. So here it's like a little, again, it's like they're just dialing back the story a little bit, like resetting it just softly to like make it seem like, oh yeah, Magneto should not be trusted. He's a super villain.
Right.
When that's not exactly the case.
Right. I mean, he flip-flops, but always, like, with good reasons.
Yeah.
Like, well, anyway, reasons that you could, like, kind of see where he's coming from.
Right.
You know? So Scott's kind of, like, wondering, like, what's going on? Because the thing is that, like, because of their ideological differences, it would have made sense for Scott to inherit the X-Men, at least, you know, if not, like, Xavier's full fortune or whatever.
Yeah, we, and again, we do question the money situation.
Yes. Highly suspect.
He's left Magneto all his money? I've been reviewing the credit card expenditures by your team, Scott. Charles might have been lax with the Amex cards, but I will not be.
Right. So, basically, like, the UN and Val Cooper and all these, like, military leaders around the world are not, they're not, like, totally understanding what's going on with Magneto.
They're not thrilled that he's back on the scene here.
And they don't understand, like, the society at large doesn't understand what's happening with
him. I mean, like, humanity, like, the X-Men might have forgiven Magneto in the past, but humanity has not, especially since Asteroid M.
Right.
Which was, like, a direct threat to all, Earth. Because he, you know, was capable. The whole plot of that wasn't that, like, you know, his acolytes took over and they sort of imprisoned Magneto and they were going to launch weapons and blow up the Earth or something. And that was the threat of Asteroid M. And that is kind of Magneto's fault, even though that wasn't ever his intention, really. Okay. So Magneto's back. We are introduced to this new character, Executioner. I believe it's definitely a character from the comics. I'm not too familiar with Executioner. Voiced also by Matthew Watterson, the same guy as Magneto. And he's, like, assembling a new weapon where – I like how they show it where he's got, like, one of those mutant collars on his table. And somehow we just, like, see the energy magically, like, go through some pipes to this gun. So he's weaponizing the collar into gun form, which is, like, a fun little science fiction touch. cut to the sewers where we see the Friends of Humanity. They're rounding up all the Morlocks, Callisto and Leech and some of the others we'd seen from season – you know, the previous seasons. And – it's pretty dark and sad.
Right. But Magneto comes in and saves them. And he, like, throws them up against the wall using some, like, metal slats.
Right.
He finds around.
Shuts them up with, like, a, like, metal scrap he, like, puts over this one blonde lady's face. The depths you humans goad, even denying these outcasts the dignity of your waste. That was a great line. Magneto, the writing on Magneto is awesome.
Yeah.
Magneto has epic writing in the original series, and obviously Apocalypse had, like, the greatest writing. This gives me hope that, like, whatever characters they bring back or introduce are going to have amazing, poetic, badass dialogue.
Yeah. Speaking of which, this next scene, we get the X-Men in the meeting room. They're having a business meeting, which we love.
It's always fun to see the X-Men in the conference room discussing the issues of the day.
And Beast quotes Mark Twain here. I don't know the exact quote, but it's something like, in order to destroy your enemy, you must make him your friend.
Right. So he's trying to justify Professor X's actions. Again, the opinions on Magneto leading the group are still mixed. Rogue wants to give Magneto a chance. We'll learn why more later.
Gambit sees that and doesn't like it.
Right. Magneto then sort of, he sort of starts bagging on the X-Men a bit for how he dealt with the Morlocks. He's like, I see with your great, Professor X's great fortune, you did nothing for the Morlocks, whereas I have sent them on a nice flight to Genosha where they'll live freely in the sunshine. And I mean, to be fair to the X-Men, if you watch those original episodes, they did try to help the Morlocks get out of the sewers, but
they do, like, invite them over for Christmas, and I think they even invite them to, like, come live in the X-Mansion.
Right, in the first episode where you meet the Morlocks, but they say, like, until there's peace between humans and mutants, we'll keep living in the sewers.
Right, which doesn't, like, really make sense, but...
All right, because the mansion's kind of secluded, and, you know, it's filled with other mutants. It's pretty big.
But also, like, how does them continuing to live in the sewers do anything to help the relationship with humanity?
I think they're just afraid of being, like, on the surface.
Right. Oh, yeah. That makes more sense, yeah.
But anyway, the point is, it's not like the X-Men didn't try. It's just the Morlocks were not that interested in moving out of the sewers. But
it makes you almost wonder, it's like, did, like, how voluntary was this, like, move?
Yeah.
No shot, I don't know.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's just funny that Magneto feels like he solved this little problem. And he also talks about how, like, the X-Men are worried that he killed all the Friends of Humanity guys, and he's like, oh, don't worry, I didn't kill those sapiens. And Cyclops doesn't believe him, and he's like, orders Jean to scan his mind.
Right, and Jean really doesn't want to, which... again, like, a little inconsistent, but this is one of those things that, like, comes and goes depending what the plot needs.
Yeah.
Because, like, her and Professor X both have definitely scanned the minds of many people without their permission.
And they've also said many times, too, it's like, I refuse, you know, on my own principles not to enter their minds.
Right.
It's just, you're right, exactly what you said. It's just based on the story.
So here she's refusing, and the reason she's citing is that, like, his intentions could change at any time. She says, like, right now in this minute, on this day... his intentions are good, but, like, that might not always be the case.
But theoretically, couldn't she just look back in his memories and see when he hatched a plan of evil? Like, oh, I'm going to take over the X-Men. And
I think she means, like, right now it's good, but tomorrow it might not be.
I know, but Cyclops is thinking what we're all thinking, that...
Keep checking.
Yeah, well, this is all a scheme, and that he planned a scheme, and now he's acting fine.
Right.
Whatever. It's fun. It's
she
fine
doesn't
for the
do
story.
It. She calms Scott down.
This is what the professor wanted. Magneto has a funny line for Storm, mm-hmm. where he's like, calls her, you're the closest thing to a goddess on Earth,
mm-hmm.
which.
I mean, she was revered as a goddess.
Right.
Right.
I would say that Magneto has similar powers to Storm in many ways, though, too. They're both elemental characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a weird way, I think he's like puffing himself out a bit, too. Mm. I think he definitely sees himself as a god. If I can control all metal on the planet of the Earth, I also would probably suspect I'm some sort of godly creature.
Here Magneto kind of comes around to saying, like, you know, you all in this room have finally realized what I realized a long time ago, which is that even Professor X can make a mistake sometimes.
This is some weird checkmate that Magneto thinks he's got the X-Men in, but it does actually sort of make sense.
Okay.
That... he's saying that, like, maybe the Professor X is human. Maybe he does mistakes. Maybe he, you know, he's not a perfect guy. But this is what his wishes were. And therefore, trust me.
Right. That's the thing, is, like, he's trying to demand their trust in this moment. Like, he is just trying to become the de facto leader because.
Yeah. It's a pretty fun scene all around. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Next, we're in Magneto's room. It's dark and Rogue is in there. And the two of them are having a talk. Magneto's talking about the helmet that he's worn all these years to block Professor X's powers from invading his thoughts, much as Jean just refused to do.
This is definitely a retcon.
Yeah.
This was not the case in the original series. The helmet was not there to block Professor X's telepathy. It was just decorative.
Right.
But I guess they want to establish that in the new series for some reason.
They're also establishing that there's a little bit of, like, a romantic connection, that him and Rogue used to have a romantic connection way back when.
Which is insane. I mean, that's also something not alluded to at all in the original series. Oh, maybe. Did this something happen between them on Asteroid M? I don't really remember, but not seriously.
I don't have a recollection of that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm confused my memories with, like, comics I read 35 years ago, but there was something between Magneto and Rogue, I believe, in the comics at some point in the past.
Okay.
I just have, like, these distinct memories of Rogue being in the Shadowland wearing, like, really skimpy, tattered leotard outfits and sort of, like, hugging on the side of Magneto, who had his rippling chest out.
What was the reason that they can touch without her, like, sapping his powers?
So I looked it up in the internet, and people have either said that, like, in the comics they established that for some reason when Rogue and Magneto's powers don't work on each other. Okay. One of those, like, magical combination things that we have with a few characters in the X-Men world.
Uh-huh.
Like Banshee and his half-brother's powers not working on each other, Cyclops and Havoc. And then other people said that, like, oh, in a later scene you see Magneto, like, he creates a very small electromagnetic shield around his skin. Mm. So that she can touch him and he's fine.
So they're not actually touching.
Not exactly.
Okay.
I guess touching enough for Rogue though, right?
Right.
Maybe.
Later, when they touch it, she seems like relieved by it almost.
I think she can feel him, but him with the shield around his skin wouldn't be able to feel her exactly.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, I didn't come up with this loony science here.
They can touch.
The point, and the other weird thing is like, hey, they had some kind of romance or relationship. It's pretty strange.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I mean, they've got an age gap thing. I don't know.
He was a maniacal supervillain thing.
Yeah. But she also was a former supervillain herself. I mean, that's sort of what they're bonding.
They talk about that also. Yeah.
And, you know, he says something also interesting, that Xavier's sacrifice brought about a world more tolerant of mutants, which, again, we haven't entirely seen evidence of yet.
Right.
Anything, we see the Friends of Humanity more determined than ever to cause chaos. And, I also noted that she calls him Eric, which...
They call him Magnus in the original series.
I do wonder if they call him Eric too at a later point in the original series as well. It's a little, he's got multiple names. I think that's all we have to just agree to disagree about there.
The UN troops.
Oh, and Gambit sees them sort of like talking privately in a room.
He sees Rogue leaving from his room.
Right, yeah. So he's starting to realize there's some weird connection between them.
Yeah.
He's not thrilled.
No, he's mad about it. So now the UN troops arrive on the lawn in their helicopters with Val Cooper, and they're there to arrest Magneto. He takes control of their helicopters and has them fly like sideways for a little bit as like a threat to them.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, all right, like if I come with you, I'll make the generous assumption that you're going to give me a fair trial. And then if I prove that I'm actually like innocent or
if I vindicate myself, you'll let me go. Right. And they say, yeah, sure. That's the point of a fair trial.
Right.
And so he agrees to be arrested, and they collar him. Again, Magneto's sort of showing the X-Men that he is trying to play by the rules. And
it's another way that he's trying to earn their trust.
Right. And then, you know, Wolverine's watching the news the next day. It's the trial of Magneto at the United Nations in New York City.
Right. Wolverine and Jean are at home watching on TV. All the other X-Men are actually at the trial.
Right. Wolverine admits that he has some sympathy with the protesters who are mad that Magneto's even having a trial in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that guy, that character Executioner, he's one of the FOH leaders. He's getting ready to attack Magneto. He's got that gun powered up with the collar powers. And then here is like...
The trial's underway.
Yeah.
Magneto gives like the most heartfelt, powerful speech.
It touches on a lot of things going on in the world right now. Themes that are forever relevant and also themes that are extremely current. He's, you know, in defending himself, he brings up his experience essentially like being a victim of the Holocaust. And then he says, in history's sad song, there's a refrain. Believe differently, love differently, be a different sex or skin and be punished. We sing this song to one another. The oppressed become the oppressors. I mean, it is an incredibly like, powerful speech he's giving.
I mean, this is like the thing that we always say separates the X-Men from like other things in this genre,
is
that it's like a very thinly veiled metaphor for just like
human rights, civil rights.
Exactly. The plight of the oppressed worldwide.
Right. And the unending chain of human violence that carries on, and people who just keep thinking that like violence and war is the answer to all our problems, and it just perpetuates like endless misery. And Magneto's speaking to all that. He's also talking about how, like, Xavier believed in a future where humanity can just forget the past and just start healing. And, you know, he goes on more. Like, he's being questioned by this council of judges at the UN. And he's like, you build robots to hunt us, collars to chain our power. And they're like, we're only trying to protect ourselves from you. And Magneto says, protection is extermination. I only have acted to avenge crimes against my people as you act to avenge those against yours today. I mean... You kind of have to just be asleep to, like, not connect what's going on in the world right now to the things Magneto is saying.
Yeah. I mean, not that it was written with that intention, because, like...
I mean, maybe it was. I don't know.
Like, the current state of affairs didn't exist exactly as it is today.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
At the time that this was written.
You're probably right about that, yeah.
But, like you said, it's a timeless theme.
Yes.
You know, like, just anytime there is a war, there's going to be, like, two sides that each have their own version of
the
story.
They're the good guy, yeah. And, I mean, it's a very powerful message from Magneto, and he ultimately is, like, appealing to the dream of Professor X, where he's, like, nonviolence, peace. And, I mean, that's what I personally believe in, is that, like, War is bad. People should not be fighting with the intention of killing each other. They should. There has to be a diplomatic way for people to come together and try to resolve their differences. Because the second you start using violence to enforce a political viewpoint, a religious viewpoint, a whatever viewpoint your viewpoints emanate from, you're in trouble. You've made a big mistake, and we're just like slipping into madness as like a as a species.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's written so well. It's like really fascinating that it comes from Magneto.
It's delivered so well,
and then the stakes go up to 11 because the Friends of Humanity start breaching the corridors of the UN. And the council judge is like, why is this happening? And Magneto tells them coldly, you gave the monster a trial. Now you are traitors to your kind. Oh, to play by the rules and still they come for you. And he's like speaking to like what happens like in, when a group of people are like pretty radicalized and fascist in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the X-Men now to protect the UN grounds. And again, it's like, you'd have to be asleep not to compare this to like what happened on January 6th in the United States.
Right. They even use the word insurrection, which is, I feel like, a pretty specific choice of vocabulary.
Right. So things are getting quite bananas in X-Men world. This is like, you would not expect this from a Marvel property, especially in this day and age, like having a pretty direct January 6th allusion going on. And but then like the stakes keep going up in more like fun, like human, like wacky ways where you cut back to Logan. He's watching this all on TV. He's like, I got to get to New York and help the X-Men. And Jean's like, Logan, he's here. Who's here? Apocalypse? And he shoots his claws out. She's like, no, you idiot, the baby. She doesn't quite say that, but
yeah.
And he freaks out. He's even more afraid.
He's driving like a total madman to get her to the hospital.
It doesn't make sense that he's driving so insanely.
Well, he's nervous.
He's like driving on the sidewalk. Jean has to use her mental powers to lift people out of the way of Wolverine's reckless driving. It's quite a fun as she's going through labor. Back at the UN, the Friends of Humanity are just like storming the gates and shooting, and the X-Men are doing all they can to like keep them at bay. Like Cyclops like shoots the ground and creates a wall like by sort of like shooting the rubble up into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only a temporary sort of like measure. And then there's sort of like one guy does breach these defenses, and it's the executioner guy.
Of course.
And Beast does a scan on him and like checks out his armor. And this executioner guy is a real badass of a fighter.
Yeah, he manages to get the anti-power collar on Bishop.
Right, yeah.
He's got, like, the staff, sort of like a pointy staff.
Yeah, bow staff.
That he, like, throws at Cyclops' visor, which, like, knocks it off.
Knocks it off, cracks it.
He starts beating Cyclops up.
Cyclops, who we know we saw earlier, is awesome in hand-to-hand fighting, and Cyclops is getting, like, the crap kicked out of him here. I mean, he's at a bit of a disadvantage because his eyes have to be closed. Like, he briefly had his eyes open and shot into the ceiling of the UN, and he knows right. How dangerous
this is. There's, like, a huge crowd of civilians all around, so he can't just, like, take the chance of opening his eyes at this guy.
Right.
But, like, the dialogue here is truly insane.
Yeah.
He's talking about how, the executioner is talking about how, like, he hates whining as much as he hates mutants. Like, don't you know that regular people have hard lives, too?
Right. But you guys whine about it, and I hate whining as much as I hate you mutants. And he's doing this all as he's, like, beating up our hero and best friend Cyclops.
Yeah. Morph comes in. First, he's Lady Deathstrike.
Morph saves the day here.
Then he's Colossus. Then he's Psylocke.
Or Quinnon.
Oh, okay.
It's complicated.
Meanwhile, Jean is sending like a telepathic message to Scott, telling him that the baby's about to come. So
and she needs him.
Storm starts giving the orders, basically. She tells Rogue to fly Cyclops to Jean at the hospital right away. And then she like orders the UN Council to uncollar Magneto. And they're like,
and also like deploy more troops around too, which is again like interesting allusions to January 6th in the sense of like the National Guard not being deployed quickly enough,
right?
Because of Trump, and Storm is just like not having it. She's like, they're sort of questioning her, and she's like, "Do not think, be silent, heed my commands, and you shall survive." I've never seen Storm this angry. It's amazing,
it's awesome.
Yeah, what they do with Storm in these first two episodes is something else.
Meanwhile, back at the hospital, the doctor is refusing to deliver Jean's baby because he feels like it's a risk
Because they're both babies. Yeah.
Could come out as a mutant and like harm him in some way.
And also, and she's like, you're in labor and you're a mutant. Like, I don't know what your powers are. It's too dangerous to deliver mutant babies. I mean, he's saying it with like the most like shit eating grin of a bigot ever. Yeah. He's an asshole. And instead of like yelling with the doctor, the X-Men just think very cleverly. The Cyclops is like, Rogue, how about you just absorb his medical expertise with your powers and you deliver the baby?
Right. I like this scene because, like, I feel like a lot of times when Rogue absorbs powers from people,
right,
they just kind of stand still and then, like, faint. They just, like, droop,
yeah,
you know? This guy, it's like his eyes bug out of his head. It's clearly painful for him. Yeah. Like, only for a second, but still.
Well, until he comes unconscious. I mean, her powers do cause tremendous harm to whoever she absorbs from.
Right, exactly. But it makes sense to me that it would be painful. Like, they show it being painful, and that's not usually the case, I feel like.
Right. And we've always discussed, too, before about, like, the weirdness of Rogue's powers, especially when she's absorbing stuff from humans. She's mainly, you'd think she's just mainly taking their memories.
But it's also like their learned abilities.
Yeah, like, so it's a little, I feel like that was like added on later a little bit, that, but I think it makes her power more interesting for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But she does this right away. And I like how the doctor is just like, wait, what are you guys going to do to me?
And then
all his worst fears are coming true. And
it'll be fine.
Right. And so Ro gets this guy's medical knowledge and she starts ordering the medical staff around, telling them, you know, get a IV in her arm, stat.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, back at the UN, Magneto is now freed of his collar, and he starts like gathering up like chairs and other debris from the UN and makes them into these large pillars. And he's like, "Be animals and be caged."
Storm flies in from above, and she uses lightning to like she makes the cage like an electric fence, basically,
right,
so it like pens all the people in.
They're a good team, Magneto and Storm.
Yep,
ultra powered gods.
Meanwhile, Executioner is going, he's like lining up the shot with his like collar gun thing at Magneto, who's front and center, and Storm sees it coming because she's flying above,
right,
and she like dives in and saves him, but she gets blasted and she loses her powers and she's like so upset, like crying on the floor, inconsolable.
Right. Magneto, I mean, the drama here is like really insane, well done. The action's paced amazingly.
Yeah.
The dialogue's incredible. Like, this is truly one of the greatest scenes ever in the history of the X-Men animated series. Magneto like rips the UN logo off the wall and basically like grabs Executioner and crucifies him to it, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Like puts him in a sort of like a crucified pose. And you cut back to Storm and she's crying and she's like, the breeze is gone. I can't feel it, nor the moisture, nor the air. What has he done to me? So Storm has been defanged in a horrible way. And at this point, Dr. Cooper's there and she's pleading with Magneto like not to like kill anybody and just to stop this madness. And Magneto has just like had enough.
Yeah.
He's like, lies. All the X-Men have ever done is use their awesome power to protect a world that fears and hates them. And and as I've said many times, never again. And at this point, he blows the lid off the UN ceiling and
he takes like a whole chunk out of the ground underneath like the Council of Judges. He brings that into space with him, along with like the executioner on the
right,
that metal
who's still
thing
splayed against the UN logo. And then like he drags them into space. They start like shivering a little bit. Like he's very high up in the atmosphere. They could see the whole planet Earth, and Magneto's sort of crying as he's just like, he's ready to kill these people. He starts addressing them one by one. Bigot, ingrate, sycophantic worm. So small I could smite you with a step. But then he takes the high road. Like, he really is serious about Professor X here and his dream.
Yeah.
He's like, Charles would always remind me when we had this view of the Earth that this is a shared world with a common future, and my kind like yours has a right to live in it. So he shows mercy. Meanwhile, this is all happening. Like, you're seeing the baby being born. Scott and Jean name him Nathan Charles Summers, and we all know that this is Cable.
Right.
Although, if you're a true comic fan, you're wondering, like, well, isn't Cable really the son of Madeline Pryor and Scott, not Jean and Scott?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hold on a minute.
Yeah, it's coming.
Wolverine's witnessing all this. Meanwhile, we get some more exposition dumping. The UN has issued a pardon for Magneto for saving the Tribunal and restoring order to the UN. Cooper, all in a further like nod to mutants, Dr. Cooper says the UN is also going to admit Genosha in as like a member nation, the mutant country of Genosha. Cyclops and Magneto are back at the mansion. They're sharing a coffee. They make peace with each other. And again, it's like, are Scott and Jean leaving the mansion? Like, yeah, I guess maybe.
Yeah, it seems at this point it seems like yes. And Magneto like issues a warning to Scott. He's like, stay vigilant out there, basically. Like,
yeah,
you guys are going to be in danger. So just like,
right,
you know, keep an eye out.
Meanwhile, in the X lab, Beast is doing tests on Storm, and he's like, listen, the collars that inhibited our powers used a small amount of radiation to like keep our powers at bay, which is sort of confusing because the X-Men powers are somewhat based in radiation. Anyway, he's like, but this is a concentrated laser blast. And Storm's like, give it to me straight, Beast. And he has to give her the bad news that it's permanent.
It looks to be permanent.
Right. And Jean says, oh, don't worry, we're going to fix this. She, like, sort of like a fit of like manic promising, like that Mr. Fantastic does to the Thing. I will cure you.
Well, Jean doesn't say she's going to cure her. She says, like, we're going to stay here. Scott and I are not leaving until you're well again.
All right, yeah, so we get the final answer in that.
Call it Muir Island. Like, we got to get our best people on
this. We got to get Moira McTaggart on the scene.
Yeah.
And Storm is, she's given up all hope.
Yeah, she goes back to her room and she, like, is looking at her uniform and there's a storm going on outside. She's like startled by the thunder and lightning for the first time in her life, perhaps.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was a little bit subtle. And yeah, because she's not in control, but she can't feel it anymore. She can't feel the weather.
Right. She leaves a letter behind for Jean to read, and she also leaves her lightning earrings. Iconic earrings.
You think they're a gift for Jean, or she just couldn't stand to wear them anymore?
I don't know. Jean does read the letter aloud.
Right. So we get a little bit of montage here. And in the montage, we've seen Rogue and Magneto hold hands. Again, you kind of get the idea that Magneto's using his electromagnetic shield to protect himself from her.
They show a little flash.
Right. Or maybe, again, it's like in the comics that their powers cancel each other out for some bizarre reason. Not the case in the movies, though.
But Rogue looks so happy to just be like experiencing any kind of human touch.
Right.
And Gambit, like, sees them together and is very upset.
He drops a card. He's very sad. Wolverine's hanging out in a tree in the X-Mansion forest, and Morph sees him and, like, throws some beer and chips at him. And he wants to have fun with Wolverine, get him out of his bad mood. And then he turns into Sabretooth to just, like, roughhouse with him, which is kind of fun. Sabretooth design looked good, by the way.
Yeah.
Storm then just hops on a bus and leaves the mansion.
Very emotional. Now we walk in two very different worlds,
right,
she says to Jean.
Right, Jean's reading the letter to the rest of the X-Men, and everyone's very sad and emotional. Jubilee is gripping Beast's arm, and she's listening. And
I just was thinking, I like laughed a little when I saw that. I was like, oh, Beast, he's so furry. That would probably be nice.
Yeah. this Storm losing her power stuff, it's all out of the comic books from the 80s, I believe. Like, after the Dark Phoenix saga, Storm, I forget how Storm loses her powers, but I think in the storyline, Storm challenges Cyclops for leadership of the X-Men in the Danger Room, and she's depowered, and she beats Cyclops, who has his powers, and Cyclops is the one that leaves the team.
Mm.
And that's where, like, the whole Madeline Pryor stuff begins with Cyclops. So, I don't know if Storm had left right away in the maybe she did, too, but they're doing their own thing, spin on it, and they're bringing up some classic Chris Claremont storylines here, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Gambit is expressing anger at Magneto. He knows what's going on between Rogue and Magneto, or he can sense it. And he's like explaining, like, I wish, you know, that blast was meant for you, not for Storm. Like, you're the one who should be leaving right now.
Yeah.
And
Morph's like, don't worry about it. Like, she's going to come right back. Like, she'll be back tomorrow. You'll just wait and see. And then they hear a knock on the door, and Morph runs to open.
Everyone thinks it might be Storm.
I know.
Which is not unreasonable to assume that maybe Storm only got just a little bit away and just like realized, no, these are my family.
Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no. Instead, it's Jean Grey at the door, the real Jean.
Well, yeah, I guess the real Jean.
Probably.
If it goes by the comic books, it's supposed to be the real Jean.
I need the X-Men.
Right.
Jean?
And she looks all, like, sort of battered and messed up. Cyclops, like, yeah, Cyclops is Jean. You know, there's so many shapeshifters out in the world that, I don't know, he's been with Jean, this Jean's pregnant, they just had a kid, this Jean has powers,
yeah,
he has all their memories.
That's true.
Why would he assume that this is also Jean or the real Jean?
I mean, if you base this on the original series, like, it's pretty likely to be Mystique or somebody.
Right, yeah.
But
if you're going by the comics, it is the real Jean, because Madeline Pryor is a clone that the Phoenix Force made because the real Jean died. All right. So before Jean becomes the Phoenix, the first good Phoenix that has the green and gold costume, they're going, like, they're crashing back into the atmosphere. That Jean does die, or maybe the real Jean is put in like a stasis coma by the Phoenix Force so that she could be, her body can be healed at the bottom of the ocean or something. Meanwhile, the new Jean is like a clone of that Jean that's just the Phoenix. And I know I'm confusing and messing up the storyline too, because Madeline Pryor, I think, is a clone that Mr. Sinister makes. Again, I'm like, I'm very confused. The whole point is that when they did this retconning in the comics, people were unhappy because they undid the fact that Jean was dead via the Dark Phoenix storyline. Like after when Dark Phoenix dies, Jean Grey is dead.
Right.
And Scott starts dating a new woman who looks remarkably like Jean Grey, named Madeline Pryor. And she doesn't, but she doesn't present herself as Jean Grey. She just looks like Jean Grey. Mm-hmm. And then they, like, some weird shit happens where I do think she gets pregnant. They have a kid. That kid is Cable. That kid gets sent to the future because he has a disease, and they only, the Cable can be healed in the future, the baby or something. So they sacrifice him there. But then the real Jean comes back, and like Scott, like, unceremoniously dumps Madeline Pryor and kicks her out the door and gets back with the original Jean Grey. They form X-Factor. Uh-huh. So that comic spins off there. It's like so confused. I don't have all the details
correct.
The
X-Men is really just like one elaborate soap opera. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I know people might be cringing at home, like, as I'm not getting all the details exactly correct. I mean, I definitely read all the shit in the comics. I just can't.
It's a long time.
Right. And I just remember thinking it was all stupid. Like, that's why it wasn't important to remember the exact details of like where and why and who Madeline Pryor is compared to who Jean is and like why it's all happening. It's just very silly. However, that all said, that doesn't mean I'm against it existing in the X-Men animated series. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for them to do this stupid convoluted storyline because it's just funny. I mean,
it's made for modern television. Yeah. Sure, they're going to like clean up the story and make it make sense. So far, I have to say, I don't really feel like there's been any glaring plot holes.
Right.
Like, if anyone else out there has noticed any, please let us know.
I mean, you know, this stuff with Magneto's helmet a little bit, like we talked about soft resets and some character relationships.
Yeah, that's not a plot hole. That doesn't like invalidate anything else that happened within these episodes.
They're doing their own cleanup.
Yeah. So I'm sure they'll do that too.
Right. And the original series itself had like various continuity conflicts. Again, as we talked about, like Archangel's one that didn't make sense. And there's a few other examples, perhaps maybe with Mystique or something. I don't know. We got to do our final thoughts and summation here. I mean, we went through the first two episodes in a very granular way here because the X-Men is back. We had to cover every detail of everything that happened.
It's too exciting.
It's interesting. It was truly very good.
There's no way you're listening to this and not haven't seen these episodes.
That would be strange.
So, you know, like, if you have nitpicks that we didn't cover or, like, you know, let us know.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know, like, what else everybody noticed.
And I'm pretty confident people are going to let us know their full thoughts and, like, spoilery reactions and where they think it's all going. But I think everyone's probably going to agree it was really, really good.
For me, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 for sure.
I like that they released both episodes at the same time because it was the first episode, like you said, was like getting our feet wet. Like,
selfishly, I didn't like it because doing a double podcast is really hard.
I know, but the first episode really, like,
we have a lot of edits in this one.
Okay, that was good. This is going to be good. But the second one, like, they really just like get right into the heart of it.
High drama. Storm, Jean, the kid, Magneto, world peace, bigotry, hatred. It's just like all there, like.
The greatest hits.
Crazily in your face in a really fun way. It's super exciting. I mean, it's just like, it was written in a very exciting way.
I am very curious how we're going to proceed from here. Are we going to have an overarching storyline? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to, because it's like, if you're going to introduce like Apocalypse and Mr. Mm-hmm. Sinister. And
I think it's going to be Mr. Sinister sort of kind of the character, supposedly.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like, is that going to be like, you know, a 5-episode arc? Is it going to take the whole rest of this season?
I think they're going to do big arcs because that's sort of the touchstone of the original series. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know like certain seasons like had mini arcs.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to tell in season one, at least, especially with just 10 episodes, they're just going to tell one big story. Mm-hmm. And the thing that excites me is that everyone who saw the first three episodes, they say episode 3 is the best one, which blows my mind because episode 2 was like remarkably better than episode 1. And episode 1 was not bad by any means. It was great.
Yeah.
So if episode 3 is even better, then I don't even know. Like what's going on here? Like how could the show be that good? It's amazing. I mean, but hey, that's why we started the X-Men Task podcast. We knew the show was awesome way back when. And it's so cool that the people they got to bring it back like understood that and seemingly have like made it as good as it can be 30 years later. Mm-hmm. So with that, again, we want to hear from everybody. We're very grateful and thankful to everyone who's still with us after all these years listening. This is really exciting for everybody that we all get to sort of like share these shows together and talk about them and gab about them and, you know, just, again, share that experience. So that's really nice. And Sonia, until next week.
Good night.
Good night.